hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like.
X-Go, give it to you.
How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Biosonic sound experience. That's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it?
X-Go, give it to you.
Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S.
Give up.
Order now at Acura.com.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Dugout Study Hall, a remedial course in baseball stats and proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I'm your host and expert layman, Matt Goodwin, and I am joined, as always, by your fake baseball economist, Alexander Chase. With us today are Jared Perkins and Austin Beiler from Major League University, a top-tier mindset and leadership company whose mission is to inspire student-athletes to become the best versions of themselves. Jared is a prospector and mental health advocate with connections to the Royals organization, and Austin is a former Diamondbacks farmhand working closely with tomorrow's stars to set them on the right path in body, mind, and spirit. We are fortunate to have them along for the ride today, so without further ado, here is our conversation. Hey guys, thanks so much for joining us. How are you doing tonight?
Doing well, man. Thanks for having us on here, guys. We're excited for it. JP, let's go, baby.
Yeah, excited to be here. Excited to chat about some baseball, some mental health. It'll be good.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we really appreciate you having we really appreciate you being on, not you having us on, but maybe down the road sometime. Alexander, what's going on down there in DC, man?
Not too terribly much. Okay. I don't know if y'all know our guests here. Every time we start an episode, we can't fight the urge but to talk about the weather the entire time.
Happens so every time.
I feel like I need to talk about how it's about to get cold here, and I don't know how I feel about that. But I also feel a little bit weird about the fact that my first urge is just to start talking about weather with strangers with no other details about myself.
I mean, I'm in DC too, so we can chat about having the same type of weather.
Well, there you go. There you go. You're not got wrong. That to bond over.
Arizona's pretty nice right now if you guys want to be a little jealous. 80
oh, yeah,
degrees today,
a
sunshine, a slight breeze from the west is nice.
That's perfect golf weather.
It is great.
Jealous about that, yeah.
Yeah, most definitely. All right, well, we are incredibly lucky to have both of you on. I think the perspective that you bring to the conversation about baseball is unique and insightful, and it's going to give us kind of an angle that we've never had before. So if you wouldn't mind, just kind of introduce us to your thing that you're really both involved in this Major League University. I want you to talk about it. It's your passion. It's your baby. Gush about it a little bit.
Absolutely, man. So Major League University, our whole goal is to help inspire athletes through the mental side of the game, equipping the teams and individuals with leadership skills, mental skills, and mindfulness, and just helping them be the best that they can be character-wise, being the best version of themselves. It all kind of stemmed from our own personal experience, which we'll get into in a little bit, but we founded it in 2018 really with no direction. The first direction was online lessons. Like, yeah, let's just try out, let's be online, try it out, see what happens. And then we're like, I don't know about this online lesson thing. I think mental health is a little more important. Let's find a way to impact athletes since we're already in the space through mental health. So that's really kind of where we founded it on and where we started. And so now we get to go work with a bunch of teams and individuals as well, just peak performance wise, helping equip them to play present, to be the best that they can be on the field.
Yeah. And for me, I joined about a year ago. Austin and I knew each other from college. I worked for the University of Nevada baseball team while he was playing there. And I work full time on healthcare policy. And so this destigmatizing mental health has become one of my biggest passions. And just the opportunity to work with Austin and Ray and all the great work that they're doing at Major League University. I mean, it's a kind of like a dream come true, because you can see the on the ground impact that they're having on kids and coaches and athletes everywhere.
That's great. It's really important work. I think the more people that are talking about it, the less that stigma holds people back. Even just the other day, I mean, yesterday maybe was it's a football reference, but Calvin Ridley stepping away from the game for a little bit to attend to his mental health. I don't think 10 years ago you would see a player doing that. It, certainly not announced on Twitter. So I really think that's an important conversation, and things like what you're doing get us there. It's really good work.
What really surprised me also is, like, I went to his tweet. I'm not a football person, so that is not like a normal thing.
Different kind of football.
You know, I would expect that you'd see, you know, a bunch of like people just being really terrible, because that's what the internet's for. And the response wasn't. I hate that I'm surprised by that still, but I'm glad that I'm getting to the point where, like, I would say that soon that's probably going to be our default response for a lot of these sorts of things. So yeah, I mean, good for him, good for his coaches, I guess, that's kind of like where they're all at, where they can just be normal about that sort of what should be normal choice.
Mm. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, kudos to him, kudos to everybody around him. And you're right. Kudos to the fan space that didn't turn this into some sort of macho competition about what strength is supposed to be and what it means to be a man, and all those toxic things that drive us all in the wrong directions. Again, thank you both for being here to talk about this, but more importantly, not just being here, being present in the world to talk about these things, because the more people that do that, the easier it is for other people to have those same conversations. Jared, I want to kind of come over and talk to you first, if you don't mind. If you could just give us your background, your story, your experience with baseball in all the different levels and roles that you've had over the years.
Yeah, so I started working in baseball when I was about 13 years old as a bat boy for an independent league baseball team. And then I transferred, and when I turned 16, I started working for the Kansas City Royals in the clubhouse. So I worked in the Arizona League through instructs, things like that, then minor league spring training. And that led to me becoming a student manager at Arizona State University, where I did a lot more baseball operations type work. So I did a lot of filming, a lot of more of the recruiting database, and then moved over to the University of Nevada, Reno, where I became baseball operations assistant, and helped out with travel, helped out with recruiting database, doing a lot of the filming, pitch tracking behind home plate. And so that's kind of how my career in baseball went, and then somehow shifted into working on healthcare policy. And so here we are now. But it's amazing to see my two biggest passions like kind of come together. And being able to try to have some kind of impact on that. And I think that's like what's meant the most to me, is just being able to have these impact on athletes now, use the skills I learned in health policy to be able to tie that into baseball too.
Absolutely. Hey, I'll ask you a quick question before we get Austin's backstory here. What's your favorite memory from your time being close to behind the scenes? And it doesn't have to necessarily be the Royals, just anything where you got to kind of glimpse something that the rest of us don't get to see.
I think it was watching Salvador Perez when he was 17 years old. I was 16 working for the Royals. Like, you watched that guy behind the dish, and he was just better than everybody else on the field. And it's the guy was 17. He's still humongous, jacking home runs. Yeah. And look how quickly he rose through the system. Just being able to watch him kind of develop from that age to, because I was with the Royals for about 8 years, so I got to see a lot of it. And just seeing him be able to develop that from that to what he is now, the clubhouse leader, the home run leader in baseball. I mean, he just, he always stayed humble. That was a big thing.
Yeah.
He would talked to you in the clubhouse every time he was there. Even when he was 17, he was learning English, but he was still always open, cracking jokes, and he never changed his personality, which was awesome.
That's a great story. Now, Austin, you have your own set of experiences. You want to go ahead and tell us your backstory a little bit, and then I'm going to ask you the same question. So as you're talking, maybe you can think about your favorite moment from your time around ballparks.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So grew up Arizona, born and raised, same as JP there, and I actually got to play JP's school a couple of times in high school, which is pretty fun. Didn't even know him at the time until we got into college together. So grew up here and then went on to play at the University of Nevada from 2011 to 15. And when I was there, was drafted twice. First year, my junior year was ninth round to the Nationals. And then the next year, 11th to the D-backs, and then got into professional baseball until about 2018. I was released in the spring of 2018. Independent ball for like a month, didn't really like it. Knew my passion was done with the game and found another way to go impact athletes outside of the game. So that was kind of like the brief playing background there. And then I think for a favorite moment, man, favorite moment. So I think professional baseball gives you a lot of different moments and a lot of different looks. There's a couple. One, like the real moment was when I watched all of the dudes in the big leagues and just their consistency and their approach and how they took their batting practice, how they went after it and the things that they did. But I think one of my favorite moments was one of my coaches was Shelly Duncan, and he played for a while in the big leagues. His brother did too. I mean, I think his dad might, I don't know if he's still coaching or he was, but pitching coach for the Cardinals for a long time. And this dude is full of energy. I mean, he is just ultimate sauce. He's getting up and all this other stuff. And, he just gets up there, just everything that he says is just hilarious, right? So he gives him this big old smile, like fired up right in your face. And I remember we had all the minor leaguers back after the season to present champions, and it's kind of like Hillsborough Hops won, a couple of the affiliates won. So they're giving out the awards, and he stands up there and it's all serious. Everybody's like giving their serious talk. And then he's supposed to be serious, right? And he starts off serious, starts giving us all fired up, but then he just says something. I don't even remember what he said, but he says it with this big old smile. He's like, embrace the suck. He's like, everything sucks here. And like, just totally out of left field, like makes this crazy joke. And everyone's like, whoa, what is happening in this room? I mean, we got like the GM and all the big dogs. And he just always found a way to put a light in the room. So dude's awesome. He's with the White Sox now as one of the bench coaches, but awesome dude. Learned a lot from him. And just the memories, man, the Dominicans, the music in the clubhouse, they're so much fun. Those guys have a lot of flavor and a lot of fun to play with them.
That's amazing. It's definitely a perspective that most of us mere mortals don't sniff. And my baseball career peaked around eighth grade, I think. So that was the end of that. And when I knew I wasn't going to be playing at Fenway. Alexander, you want to jump in? I know you had had some thoughts that you wanted to throw out there.
What, like my favorite baseball memory? Is that what you're fishing for here?
I
don't have any really important ones here to share.
If that is what you would like to go with, that is. I'm actually hoping that's what you decide to talk about. You and me, we'll talk about our 12-year-old leagues.
You know, I'm really curious, actually, like how many kids out there end up having some sort of like youth baseball experience that is shaped by someone who at least made their way into like the minors. Because like I had one coach at some point who had been like a sort of like a long time minor league pitcher who kind of just like found his way as a guy that just stuck around in AAA, and you know, as a result, kind of like the way that he saw things and the passion he had for things, it was like very, very easy to pick up, and made me someone who's very uncoordinated whenever I was, you know, about 12 years old, at least want to keep going to practice, which is good. So I really wonder to a great degree, like how much people's opinions and like understanding of their experiences as kids get shaped by people who do have something that's more than just like, you know, I was really good when I was 16 sort of level experience that I think a lot of dads that maybe that's like all they can really pass on, which isn't a bad thing necessarily, but you know.
No, not at all. Yeah, my closest encounter was Brad Ausmus was from my hometown, and he would come back and run some hitting clinics in wintertime and stuff. That was pretty cool, but you never really coached, you know, just show up and he was there. Great guy, super nice guy, but at least to us, I don't know, we were paying, so maybe that's why. Yeah, but you're right, Alexander. I think that there is a lot of that. Bobby Valentine lives in the area here. I know he's pretty connected to the local universities. So yeah, I never really thought about it from that point of view, but I bet that a lot of minor league players do wind up having an impact on a lot of that youth stuff. And certainly that's the direction you guys are trying to go with your major league university. Austin, I would like to turn to you, and I'm going to give you the floor to kind of tell your story, because I think that you had an experience, obviously within the confines of baseball, but that kind of goes in a different direction and brings us together with the idea of the mental health. And, some of the questions that I've had just kind of bouncing around in my head, maybe they come up in your story, maybe they don't. But, you know, I feel like the financial pressure on minor leaguers is intense, that the pressure to perform and just go out there and do almost like commoditizing human beings rather than looking at them as people who are trying to do something. And again, not to say anything about the specific coaches or players you are working with, but just the system itself really seems like it's set up to grind those minor leaguers. I want to give you the opportunity to tell your story in your words. It's not anybody else's story to tell. But those are the kinds of things I think about. You know, if somebody gets injured in the minors, what's the pressure like? What happens if somebody tests positive for a banned substance, and how that's different from major leagues and minor leagues and all that. So I'm going to give you the floor, and I'm going to stop talking and let you tell your story.
Absolutely, man. So it all kind of started back in 2012 with the University of Nevada. And so it was my sophomore season. We're about halfway through. We're almost into April. So I'd say 3 to 4 weeks left of the season, and I get hurt. I have the shooting pain down my left leg. I'm wondering, like, where the heck did it even come from? There was no, like, cause to the injury, right? It just started shooting pain. So what the heck's going on? So I got a couple of MRIs and didn't know what was happening still. I almost had hip surgery. Thankfully, I didn't have to have hip surgery. But oh, I was 2 days away from having hip surgery. And then I got an MRI, like, just a second opinion, and they found something else. It was a degenerative disc in my lower back. And so my ego creeps in, right? I'm 19 years old. I'm hitting 350. I'm like top of the league in homers. I'm like, man, I'm 1 year away from being drafted. If I stay healthy this year, I'm going to Team USA. If that doesn't work out, I'm going to the Cape Cod League. Like, I can't miss this season.
Yeah.
Right? You can't miss it. So I have a couple of choices to make. And there was a teammate on the team who was previously hurt with a shoulder injury. And so I was using like ibuprofens and Advils and all this other stuff to try and mask out the pain, and it did nothing. It wasn't working. And so he finally said, look, dude, I just had shoulder surgery. I have some Norcos. You should try one. Try one before you go play. I'm like, yeah, sure. Nothing else working. Let me try it out.
Yeah.
And I took one. I went 2 for 4 and I was moving at third base again. And I was like, man, I feel like freaking Zeus. Like, this is awesome. Like, can I have another one? Can I have another one? Right. So it became this pregame ritual to play through this pain. And eventually the pain got so great that I wasn't able to play and finish out the season for the last couple of weeks, but the habit never left. And so from that moment on, I started to feel like I needed to use prescription medication to mask physical pain at the time to go out there and play. And so I go through the summer, come back the next year, I hang around the same people who are doing the same things. The addiction grows and grows and grows. I still have success though in the season, right? I was drafted. I'm all American, all this cool stuff that's happening on the field. Go back to school and I'm like, all right, senior year, done with it. Well, that lasted about a week, and the addiction was so strong that I couldn't stop, because I had withdrawals if I stopped, that it was just easier to keep using it than stop using it. And so the physical pain turned to this mental turmoil of the anxiety, the depression, and the worry of showing up, performing. Our team had a lot of pressure on us because we were going to be good, and we had a great coaching staff now at LSU for the most part, and we had this awesome opportunity ahead of us. And so I just kept using them. I was like, man, this will stop eventually. And so we get through that spring season in 15. I go into professional baseball and I told myself, I'm done, right? I get drafted by the Diamondbacks hometown squad. Let's go. We're all fired up and celebrating back home. And I go out in that summer and I crushed it, right? I had freaking led the league in homers. I was like all-star. We won the championship. I'm a top 20 prospect. I'm like, man, I'm one step away from the big leagues. Let's freaking go. And so I get invited back to Instructs. And about halfway through, I remember coming back from the Reds complex. I was 4 for 4 and I made the game ending error at first base. I missed a ball and my coach got on me and we lost the Instructs game, and he seemed like it was the end of the world. And I'm like, dude, we got 2 weeks left and I get to be on vacation for a little. And I get back in and we're all walking into the clubhouse. And as we all do, it's like single file line. It's kind of creepy, but it's all like the same deal, right? And the third base coach for the D-backs, and at the time was the info coordinator, is sitting at the door. He's giving everybody a nux, just like he does every day, saying, hey, good job today. Go get him tomorrow. Get some rest, blah, blah, blah. Take care of yourself. And he stops with me and he goes, Byler, and he pulls his glasses. I was like, Byler, you got to come to my office for a second. I need to speak with you. And so at this point, I'm like, this is either really good or this is really bad, right? It's like your heart drops. Like, man, what did I do? So I go into his office, the director of scouting, Mike Bell, is sitting there right across from me. So they're both sitting there in the room and they go, look, by there, we're sorry to inform you, but you failed a drug test. You're going to miss the first 50 games of next season. You're going to miss the first 50 games. And so that's a third of the minor league season. They get 140. Yeah. And I'm sitting here like, dude, I got to call my mom, my dad, my coaches that believed in me, all my friends, and answer all these questions. And then they go, oh, by the way, next Friday, be ready because there's going to be a nasty article written about you. You're going to get a lot of questions getting asked to you about this. I'm like, what do I do? And so that moment just plummeted, man. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to handle myself. My identity was totally stripped. It was always found in baseball. Then I had that shame and that guilt that I didn't know how to process through. And a lot of the emotions that start to creep in as a human being, and plus the added pressure of performing. So I go through that experience, man. I kept masking with other prescription medications after this. And once that happened, it was just this crazy turmoil. So in 2018 is when I really kind of snapped out of it and found a really good mentor here with the Fellowship of Christian Athletes locally in Arizona, who just kind of put me on the right page going into that spring season. And my life started to get a little bit better from there. But it was because of those decisions, the choices, the habits that I was making that stuck with me and eventually caught up to me after those 5 years. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget that, man. But as a minor leaguer, you go through a lot of different stressful situations. You feel like sometimes you're left on this island. Not a lot of the hotels are very nice, right? You got bed bugs, you have blood on towels, you have, one of the hotels, we had blood on the towel. We're like, well, dude, what are we doing? It's Clinton, Iowa. It smells like cow poo. And we got blood on our towels and people are stealing stuff from our guys. Like, what is happening here? So you go through all these things, but then you're like a melting pot. So I'm a senior sign. And I got decent money for a senior sign, but I'm still a senior sign. Then you have first rounder who's 18 years old. Then you have $1 million Cuban who got signed from the island, right? And you got these dudes that are just at all different levels with financial investments. And you got to find a way to perform. And then, oh, by the way, Tony La Russa is there looking over your shoulder during your batting practice, evaluating you. And it's like, man, like if I don't perform, I don't play. If I don't play, I don't get paid. If I don't get paid, which you don't get paid, you don't have a career. My career's over. So it's this massive identity crisis that goes on in sports. And a lot of athletes struggle with this. Now, they don't show it or they don't admit it like Calvin Ridley did, which I applaud that massively, or Marcus Stroman, Dansby Swanson, some guys who are really big on this. But when this happens, right, it's like you have two choices. You either sink or swim. And for me, it was like, I mean, I just kept sinking. I couldn't handle that pressure. I lost my routines and really started to kind of fail under that. So it's nerve-wracking, man. Then you talk about the injury piece too, and then I'll shift it back, is you get hurt and you're like, shoot, if I don't get healthy, I don't play. And if I don't play, there's only a limited amount of roster spots. And now today, with less draft picks and all this stuff with COVID, there's just a limited amount of supply for these guys to go in, but there's this big demand. And it's like, how do you step in and go perform if you're not mentally clear and focused, let alone even ready yourself, right? So I'm a big preacher on take care of yourself, control yourself before you control your performance, be in control of yourself and your emotions as a human being. And if you take care of you, your performance will take care of itself.
That's amazing. And thank you so much for being willing to share that story. That it takes a lot of vulnerability and it's not an easy thing to do. And you know, it's an amazing opportunity for other people who are going through those kinds of things to try and latch on to that story and, you know, see the light at the end of the tunnel maybe, or, you know, hey, when I get to my fork in the road, I've sort of heard this story, maybe, you know, it's easier for them to pick a different path. So that's really brave, man. I appreciate that so much and coming on and sharing that with us. Jared, I'm going to ask you a question. You've heard your buddy's story. I'm sure that's not the first time. How do you guys at Major League University use that to help prepare the next generation of minor leaguers?
Yeah. So, I mean, Austin can probably dive into this a little bit too more, but I think the one thing that's huge about that story that can have impact on kids is if someone's going through that, they know they're not alone. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what happens a lot. Even in young people, you see it a lot with this during the pandemic, with the suicide rating going up in high school kids. There's this tendency to feel that you're alone and no one's going through the same situation as you. And just having a person that's able to reach out and is able to kind of be that voice and let them know that they're not alone, that they all of a sudden feel like, okay, no, I can get through this. This is something that emotions are temporary. I can power through and push through. I think that's the number one thing. Austin, I don't know how you want to talk about how kind of you use it for development and things like that.
Yeah, but you're right, dude. I mean, it's we all are subject. We can all fall victim to it no matter what we do. And something was very powerful. Yeah. Hannah Huseman, she's one of the mental skills coordinators for the Philly. She said something really cool on our podcast about a year ago, maybe a year and a half on during COVID. And she said, look, we're all performers. You host a podcast, you're a performer, right? You're a teacher. You got to perform and get these kids engaged. You're a firefighter, a doctor. You got to perform under pressure. So everybody's a performer. And at Major League University, we do camps, right? We do baseball camps, and we use the baseball camp, softball camp to impact the mind, and they get in with the skills, right? That might be what they think, but then we use it to impact them mentally and emotionally to help them perform with a lot of mental skills. I'm big on the breathing and visualization. And then we work with a lot of different college and high school / travel ball organizations where we will meet with them either once a week, once every other week, once a month, even just a one-off occasion where I can go in and share my story and then give them some skills and tools. And so we'll go out and work with these programs. And the biggest things that I'm seeing with these programs is confidence at all levels, right? From Division I professional athlete down to 13U travel ball, right? Confidence is big. And then identity piece. We work with the team locally in Arizona, a junior college. And I shared my story the first day, and you don't know how your words affect someone all the time, right? You just kind of go through it. You've done it a lot. And like four or five kids came up to me like, dude, identity, like my identity, I just thought of it like my whole life, I've only been a baseball player. I don't even know who else I am. Like, dude, you're so much more than just a baseball player. You're a human being, man. You're alive. You have a beautiful life ahead of you. So we go in and we'll work with teams through peak performance. And like I said earlier, mental training and leadership development, getting them open and vulnerable, man, sharing with each other, connecting with each other, and just creating an inclusive environment for athletes to thrive in. So when they go out on the field, less distraction, more clarity, less clutter, more focus, and they can go out there and be the person and the athlete that they truly can be without all the things mentally that hold back our physical skills. So that's kind of how we adapt. And then we'll do some private coaching too, some one-on-one with specific athletes as well.
Now, I think that whole mindset thing is key, even in real life, whether you're an athlete or not. You're trying to perform in your jobs on a daily basis. If you constantly think I'm going to fail or I'm not smart enough to do this assignment, then you're probably going to be stuck in those thoughts, and it's going to be a lot harder to perform on those assignments. And the same thing goes to identity. A lot of people put their identity to their job. So if they lose their job or they aren't successful at their job, all of a sudden they think, okay, so what's my self-worth?
Yeah.
Like what, like who am I if I'm not good at my job? So when they get that negative feedback from a boss or something like that, I mean, that's the normal everyday humans going through that same exact thing. And it might not be at the same extent, the same level as an athlete who's having to perform every single day, but it's still there for normal humans on a daily basis.
No. Yeah, 100%.
One of the things that I feel like has kind of struck me over the past year or so of reporting about kind of like people's experiences in the minor leagues, pay in particular, is just really strikes me as like that cannot be the sort of thing that gets you to consistently be in like a regular mindset if you're worried about, you know, where you're staying, what you're eating, how you're paying your bills. So I'm kind of curious, as you guys interact with people who are kind of getting closer to making some of those same steps, like what sorts of things you're typically like hearing from people that they're worried about, and like how a lot of like how you help people through a lot of those struggles.
That's really good. You talk about the financial side. Well, the financial side affects every side, because if I'm getting paid, and I'm in California for two of those years that I was playing, and obviously the tax laws there are just out this roof. So whatever you're getting salary wise is cut in half immediately. And you're like, dude, what? Like, can we get like some sort of a bonus or a stipend? So you talk about that. So think about the organizations, right? And now some organizations do an incredible job. The Dodgers, I mean, they feed their dudes all organic food. It's like massive spread, but I mean, they got the money. The Yankees, same thing. The Diamondbacks were amazing. They're really, really good. And I was very blessed to be with them. But you have organizations or coaches in these organizations who preach about take care of your body, take care of your rest, get the right nutrients, eat the right foods. But yet on the spread tables are all these processed foods and things that aren't going to help you perform, with refined sugars, with things that aren't actually healthy for you. I'm like, dude, what are we doing here? So if you want us to be these products, I think of us as like gladiators, right? If you think about like Roman times and the gladiators go in, now that's life or death, right? We're not life or death, but we're performing on a few on a people in a crowd. And so we got to take care of our bodies. Well, my number one meal was Sonic. I love Sonic Blast. So I always got a large Sonic Blast, a couple tater tots, right? Some French toast sticks and a burrito. And you're going home 3 out of the 5 nights a week. And then on the weekend, who knows where you're going or what you're doing on these little small towns and places. And there's just a lot that goes into it. So I think equipping athletes to be ready for it. I know no matter what you say, it's hard until you get there, but the sleep, some of these beds are just ridiculous. And I mean, that's the nitty gritty of it. Some places are amazing, but at those tough times and in those tough moments, right, it's how can you succeed and find success? So when I was with the Diamondbacks, the first year we were in Missoula, Montana, and we had 8 dudes living in a 2-bedroom apartment because we couldn't afford anything. And now the first rounders, they can go get their own deal because they got some signing bonus to spend. But we were 8 dudes, 6 of us senior signs, 2 other college dudes. And we're like, next to each other in the living room, right? There's no furniture or anything because you can't, why would you buy anything for 2 months?
Yeah.
And we have 3 blow up mattresses. We're sleeping on blow up mattresses for a 50 something game season plus playoffs and eating horrible food, walking and riding a bike to the field. Nobody had a car. And by the way, you go downtown, you go eat all this nasty food and you just go out there and you're filling your body with bad things. So something I really challenge athletes with who are getting ready for this level, especially the college athletes, is dude, find a process that works for you. Make sure that you set the time and focus aside to do things that are healthier to make a better choice for you, whether it's the water intake, less partying and distractions with women and drugs and alcohol and things that are going to come your way right away, mm-hmm. right? Anywhere you go, stay away from those and find people that you can hold yourself accountable with who are going to be good dudes, who are doing things the right way and who can help keep you safe and healthy, because it only takes one tough decision to mark you off a list and to get you cut and honestly, ruin your own whole life too, not only career but life. So a lot of things that go into it, but that financial pressure, man, is tough because you know you're not getting paid, you know you're just as good as a lot of those people who are getting paid a lot of money, and it just comes down to opportunity sometimes and what organization you're in, who, what's the right fit, and is there a spot open at that next at your position at that next level.
All right. Well, Austin, I know that your time is limited. You're in high demand. And so we've reached the point where we have to unfortunately let you go so you can go do the stuff that pays your bills. Jared, you're going to stick around and we're going to shift the conversation into talking a little bit more of the fantasy side of things and prospects. My hope, though, is that we can get all of us back in a room. I've got air quotes for those of you at home who can't see me back into a room real soon and carry on this conversation. And because, again, I think it's just a really, really important one. I thank you so much. Before we do part ways, though, here, plug your stuff. Tell people where they can find you and everything. And we'll have Jared do the same thing at the end. But let everybody know where they can find everything that you're doing.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, you guys are awesome, man. This was so easy and it already took 40 minutes. So thank you for what you're doing, man, to be able to open and be spreading the word about this type of stuff. It's important for us. You can find us Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, anywhere at Major League University. Twitter's a little different. It's Major University. I don't know why, but they blocked the league. Maybe they're jealous. I don't know. So we got to get that fixed eventually when we get that blue check. But Major League University on all platforms, majorleagueuniversity.com. You can find our podcast on our website as well as on YouTube. Champions School. If you just type in Major League University, you can find it. And then that podcast is on SoundCloud, Spotify, Apple, all platforms as well. And then other than that, man, I appreciate you guys. Thanks for what you do. JP, you're the man. Love the hat. Let's go. We're twinning today. This is great, man. This is cool. So have a blessed night, guys.
Thank you so much for being on. And we'll be back with Jared right after a few words.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
And we are back. So, Jared, not only do you work really closely with Austin there at Major League University, you also do some work in fantasy. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that, too?
Yeah, so I currently write with the Dynasty Guru and do a lot of what he's called Jared Jet Setter. So I try to find two kind of under-the-radar prospects who might have a chance to kind of rise up prospect boards. Then I was doing high A central coverage for Prospects 1500, so just kind of covering the top prospects in that region as in that region as well. So I've been doing that for a little bit, just writing here and there. We're doing a lot of Royals coverage for Royals Farm Report, so that's probably where my in-depth analysis becomes, because I know the Royals system pretty well. Mm-hmm. And so I've done a lot of focusing on Royals prospects.
No, that's fantastic.
I know the Royals have kind of, as an organization, to kind of spin out of what we have been talking about, trying to, it seems, develop a little bit of a better reputation in terms of like how they've been treating their players. I know that they have also, like, since they've been bought a couple years ago, it seems like they've been a little bit more aggressive in terms of, you know, signing guys to like build out a competitive major league roster. So I don't know. Has that been interesting kind of covering them from like the, I don't know, like the small side of the farm, I guess? I don't even know how I would say that. That feels wrong. But
so the Royals have, the Royals have done a very good job at taking care of their players. That's something that they've always been really good at. They just built a brand new facility in Surprise that's going to house, it's like condos, full-on condos for all the minor leaguers. But they have been well known for treating their players very well. I think in the 2020 draft during the COVID year, they signed the most undrafted free agents. And I think they had like a bit of top four out of the five ranked undrafted free agents signed. So like Tucker Bradley, a couple other guys. And they were able to get them because they have this reputation of treating their players so well. Helping them like advance and develop in their careers, but they treat them like normal human beings. And they did a lot of classes where they worked on developing players as humans, not necessarily just the stats. They'd have like these kind of performance classes to help them with everyday life things, whether it was finances, whether it was just being a good person, those kind of things.
That's really great from an organizational standpoint. So I do think that's a nice transition from what we were talking about, Alexander. Well done. Kudos to you on that one.
I try.
So one of the foci. Okay. Is that an SAT word, Alexander?
I'll pass on that one. I haven't seen any recent SATs.
Okay. Is to really look at maybe the, I don't know the best way to say this. When I say lower end prospects, it sounds like those that aren't going to make it. What I mean is the really younger prospects, the 17, 18 year olds that Austin was talking about, those A, high A, maybe brandy new, double A guys. Because, you know, we've talked to Eric Cross and we've had some, the guy who does a PARS list on. And one of the things that they both talked about is it's very hard to take like a Jason Dominguez who barely can drive in certain states, and try and put him up against, you know, Bobby Witt Jr., who's, you know, about to make it into the bigs. And how do you rank those two people when you're doing these prospect lists? And so from your point of view, really being close to baseball in unique ways, and also having the knowledge that you have about the younger guys and especially those high A players, you know, how do we value them? How do we look at them and try and understand what they may become or what their skill sets might be? What's like important information? What's white noise? What's kind of the process there for understanding those much younger players?
I think the biggest thing is patience when you're looking at those younger players, because you're taking a 16 or 17 year old. They're either starting in the DSL or they come over stateside at 18. And I think as a human being, think about when you were 18 and how you acted and how you adjusted to things. And a lot of the kids who were coming over from the Latin America countries, they're getting pulled away from their families for months. Right. And so this is their first time probably outside of the country, and they're having to adjust to a whole entire new lifestyle as well. And so I think you have to think about that when it comes to development of a player. So guys like Jason and things like, their probably first time to the States was when they got to instructs or to wherever they were assigned for their first year. And like you said, they're potentially going against college guys because there's sometimes college guys in the AZL when they first get drafted. And it's, I think it's a lot harder to judge these guys off of a small sample size or a one year. Because I think, I look at Heber Perez, I think a lot of people got a little bit down on him when he got called up to low A. But he was 19 years old in low A. And they're like, oh, the strikeout rate's too high. And, but the kid's 19.
Right, right.
And he's facing higher competition. A lot of these guys have been in college, they've been playing for years. Not like he hasn't been playing for years, but this is the first time he's facing good pitching every single day.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Now, what strikes me about that, though, is, you know, like, you bring up a lot of the reasons why, you know, we do need to have patience for a lot of these kids. But I also know that when you're in those situations, like, when people are standing out, then it's really easy to kind of like write a lot of that off as potentially a white noise, or, you know, it might just be that a guy has had the benefit of facing better high school or college competition. So it's really hard in a lot of the cases when I talk to people to get a good pulse on what makes someone special at that age.
Yeah.
So like, what is it that you're often finding people can learn and will learn at those sorts of ages? And what are some of the stuff that kind of more often stands out as like a true signifier that someone's special?
Yeah. I think the one guy I looked at, this year was Yuri Perez, and he was 18 in high A and dominating people. And I think the things that stuck out most to me is he had a good sense of his command and control at 18. Hmm. So it wasn't like he had these high walk rates and he was pounding the strike zone. He had a good feel for the strike zone. And you think about a kid like that, as he develops, he's going to get better and get better feel and better command for the strike zone as he moves up levels. And so that's the thing I kind of looked at when I saw him. I was like, but this kid's he's elite and above, and he's dominating a pretty good high A league that had really good prospect bats in it, like Jordan Walker and guys like that. And I think Joey Weimer and Felix Valerio, they were all in there as well. And it's, I think when you look at that from a pitching standpoint, there's not a lot of even older guys who were doing that in that league. So I think that was the main thing, that was one of the things that really stuck out to me.
So we look at these guys that come up and they're supposed to be the next big thing, like a Kelnick or, you know, we've got a lot of helium on Bobby Witt, and for good reason, you know, what he's doing is amazing. And sometimes they struggle and sometimes they don't. And then sometimes Cedric Mullins shows up and nobody saw it coming. Like, talk to me a little bit about sort of the Cedric Mullins story. Like, how does somebody who maybe has gone through the system being good enough to keep making it suddenly just show up out of nowhere? It's kind of the flip side, I guess, to what we're talking about here. But, you know, he obviously went through systems and was rated as he was rated and then outperformed all of those projections. So how does that sort of come about?
I think sometimes it's hard to even difficult to figure out, but it could be just a slight adjustment, changing like a hitch in a swing. It could be just related to experience. I mean, you look at a guy like Lucas Giolito, it took him a while to kind of get developed and figure out how to pitch in the big leagues. Cause you're going from facing maybe one or two top prospects in AAA to facing guys who are playing in the big leagues and are good enough to hit in the big leagues every single day. I mean, imagine being a pitcher facing the Dodgers lineup versus the AAA.
Yeah, right.
So I think a lot of it probably comes down to experience, figuring out like what were you able to get away with before that you now all of a sudden can't get away with as a pitcher in the big leagues. What as a hitter, kind of what mistakes that pitchers made before that they aren't making now that you may have to make these adjustments and be prepared for. So I think a lot of it comes down to that. And Jared Kelenic, I mean, you saw he made adjustments late in the season and started to get better as he started to figure out pitching. And so I think that's one of the big things. For guys like Cedric Mullins and like Whit Merrifield, who all of a sudden came out of nowhere and became one of the top players in the league, though, it's a lot tougher. I think for some of them, they just needed – so I think Merrifield's example is a little bit different than Cedric Mullins because Merrifield just needed an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was kind of blocked from that opportunity, and he was kind of playing on a sparse basis. And then as soon as he got that opportunity, he just ran with it and became one of the better hitters. Cedric Mullins seemed to get the opportunity from the beginning. And I think he struggled a little bit when he first came up. And then this year, he just kind of took off. And it could have been he worked on something in the offseason or during the COVID year and found out that this is making him pick up pitches better and read pitches better. And that could have been the only adjustment. And I think sometimes it's hard to pick up on those things when scouting, because there's a human element that always goes with it. And someone could lurk at something in the off season in the cages that no one knows about, and all of a sudden they figure it out.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I feel like there's just like so many different things that, you know, people can learn in an off season, which just also makes like this period for us really interesting. You know, it's like you don't know which guys are just going to suddenly add enough, you know, like muscle mass to like be a genuine consistent threat or anything like that. It's quite hard to predict, but like I do find that like it seems like over and over the guys who are making a lot of these adjustments we get surprised by do seem like they tend to come from a couple different, you know, like clubs a little more often. So I don't know, I'm not going to try to ask the mean version of this where I ask you which teams you don't trust to turn their prospects into like elite bats, but like do you have any sort of like acknowledged biases about which clubs you tend to believe in their ability to turn these like low A standouts into big league stars?
I mean, there's certain teams that stick out to me when it comes to pitching. Cleveland and Tampa and Miami, those are the three organizations. Like, you see a pitching prospect there, you're like, yeah, there's a good chance they're going to become very good. I don't know what they do differently than other organizations, but they have a knack of developing pitchers. And you look at it with every person at the Cleveland, I guess, Guardians now drafted. Every single guy turns to be some kind of standout, and it's Aaron Civale came out of nowhere, basically.
McKenzie.
Shane Bieber wasn't even really a highly rated prospect. He wasn't a top 10 or a top 15 guy. And now they have Logan Allen, and they have Xavion Curry, and they have Peyton Battenfield, who they got from Tampa. So that guy's just been through two organizations that are one of the top. I think that those organizations, one, they just know what they're doing. They have a great development department, and they probably just have the right pieces in place that know how to develop these guys, where some teams maybe haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah, I do remember, I think it was, you know, Sarah's put out an interesting piece the other day from The Athletic about how it seems like the Dodgers have figured out this one type of slider that doesn't move quite in the way that we're used to sliders moving, that they've been able to successfully teach guys in the past year. And they've had several people show up all of a sudden throwing this one particular pitch with like pretty good immediate impact to their overall game. So, you know, obviously there are plenty of signs that there are organizational like decisions that clubs are trying to make in terms of like pitch design, in terms of types of guys maybe they feel like they can develop. But you know, it's always interesting to me, you know, to kind of just check in on those sorts of things that I wouldn't be looking for, because like why would I pay attention to like pitch types whenever I could just pay attention to, you know, other numbers that are easier.
Yeah,
that sort of thing strikes me. I'm sorry, Jared. I was just going to say that me as so interesting. There's so much like R&D that's done in these clubs, right? And how many years is it going to take for that slider, the mystery of that slider, to be unleashed on the league, right? A couple of guys leave the organization and suddenly everybody's got that information. It's amazing. It's like no pun really intended, but it's like an arms race between these teams to have this new thing, and how much mileage do they really get out of it? You know, it's probably only a season or two. It's interesting to me. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and just looking at the Kansas City Royals are another great example. They had no hitting prospects. Basically everybody gave up on Nick Prado, MJ Melendez, and they hired Drew Saylor, who's become like the minor league hitting coordinator. And he's been working with these guys. And now it seems like every bat for the Royals prospects are starting to take off. The guys like Michael Massey and Tucker Bradley are still underrated, but they're starting to move their way up ranks, and they're kind of coming out of nowhere. And I think a lot of it has to do with the hiring of Drew Saylor and some of those things that he's been implementing.
Yeah. I mean, you don't hear nearly as much conversation about the coaching staff or the, you know, the guy who's in charge of the program, the pitching program, the health and nutrition people, but you know, they are human beings with expertise and they're in good positions. You see personnel moves and suddenly you think like, where's this team good out of nowhere? San Francisco Giants, right? I mean, Alexander, we were talking about that off air a little bit about, you know, your theory that maybe the San Francisco Giants were just a really good team that needed a good coach and were being held back.
I would assume.
Right. So I think it's so easy for us to look at these players as like these pieces that are on our phones and scoring us points or getting us stats and forget, you know, what we were talking about in the first half, that every single one of them is a human being with a story and emotions and feelings and expertise and skill sets. And that includes the people that we're not seeing on ESPN all the time, too. Really should move our conversation to talking about specific players before we run out of time to talk about specific players. You've mentioned a couple of the names that we have here in our notes, our show notes. But I want to kind of give you the floor to go with whatever. I put a couple of names in. You have your names. You can go in any direction you want, but maybe like try and use these players as like a case study for how you go about your process and you know, minor league stats are a lot harder to get your hands on. What are the things that you look for with these guys? What makes you feel good or confident about them? And you can pick your poison with whatever name you'd like.
Yeah, I think the first one I'll mention is probably Carter Henson, who was the third rounder for the Royals. He kind of came onto the scene as soon as he got to the ACL. I think the first 10 games he was hitting .455. He showed great patience at the plate, walking 10 times in 19 games. I mean, it's a small sample size, but those are the kind of things you want to see as soon as you see a guy get to the professional baseball. Yeah. And so he was considered one of the top high school catchers in the draft. But there's some questions about whether he can catch, but he was one of the best pure hitting ones. And I think there was some questions about his hit tool. But ever since he made that small sample size, the hit tool is better than what was advertised, at least so far. And so people are taking that. And I think from what I've been reading in Instructs, he's been doing the same thing in Instructs. So that's a good sign too, because he's going up against some more top prospects that the Royals have and things like that. So that those are the kind of things that you want to see, is the strikeout rate being down and the walk rate being up.
I typically don't find a whole lot of bad things happen when strikeout rate down, walk rate up for hitters. But you know, it's still like it's so hard, I feel like, to kind of like really put a lot of those things into context and really see the growth over time. You know, it's easy to kind of see those happen at the major league level when you can see, and it's like, oh, there's no other choices being made that are making this happen. You know, if someone's just completely selling out to not strike out, and bad things can happen there. So it's good to make sure there's some other eyes on everything else that's happening and get to validate that someone really is doing something effective.
Yeah.
Why don't you grab another name off this list here and tell another story?
Yeah. Do you have any like flags you really got to plant about a guy that you're just absolutely sold on? Because that's really what I want to know. So I want to know like who you're ready to be super wrong about, just in case like that 10% chance that you're super right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think back to the 2021 draft. I think the one guy that I've been super sold on, he's a little bit older, but it was Joey Weimer, who came into high A and just absolutely started mashing every baseball that was thrown his way. I think he's about 22, so he's not too much older. People were down on his hit tool, but he made an adjustment to his swing from the reports that I was reading, and he's cut down significantly on the strikeouts. He's become more patient at the plate. He's got speed, so I think he stole over 30 bags this year or something, and he's got power, and he hit close to 30 home runs. And he just came into the Arizona Fall League now, and his exit velos have been off the charts in the Arizona Fall League. So now he's just taking off. He went from not even a top 100 prospect before he joined the Fall League, I think. And now he's definitely cracking everybody's top 100 at this point. And so that's the guy I'm just riding the hype train. And everybody apparently loves his hair.
Is there a hair tool?
So the hair game's apparently
80
like,
grade hair.
Like 80 grade. Yeah.
God, how much do you love like just the availability of all the good data for AFL? Like it seems like just a gift, and like it's almost like disappointing that we don't hear more about it and it's not marketed better, or that more of these games aren't like broadcast to national audiences, because it seems like such like a thing that, like, you know, this is like the big moment for people who don't normally watch baseball. They get excited about baseball. I would think, you know, throw on some like middle of the day ESPN action and get some people like, you know, jazzed about some of that stuff before they turn on the World Series. But so, I mean, I'm sure people like you are doing that anyway. So I don't know. How many games have you been catching?
Yeah. So when I was younger, I used to go to the Arizona Fall League. My dad would get a season pass and we'd go to games. Maybe 10 people in the stands, maybe. I had one game where we were sitting behind Omar Garcia Parra, who was watching his brother play in the Fall League. And so we got to talk to him, and because there's no one there. And so there's major leaguers in the stands all the time watching the games, whether they're a scout or they're working for an organization. And you can just sit there and talk to them, which is kind of cool. And so it's, I think for, I don't know, understand how people in Arizona haven't discovered this that are baseball fans, because you're, you had an opportunity to watch some of the top prospects in baseball, who most of them, a good majority of them, are going to become future major leaguers at some point. If you look at the Arizona Fall League Hall of Fame, it's loaded with like Derek Jeter, Jason Giambi. I mean, all these guys that you can think of. And so, I mean, that's an opportunity to see those guys before they even make it.
Yeah.
And MLB doesn't, they don't put the games on TV, I don't think.
Yeah, either. I was just going to say, people get so excited for spring training. And I get it. I mean, it's a nice time of year and it's leading into the season, but there's probably a lot more information to glean from the Arizona Fall League than there is from, you know, one inning of an exhibition game in March.
Yeah.
When you do say you're wondering why more people show up to some of these games, I will say, in just the smallest amount of their defense, that won't actually make anyone feel better. My uncle used to like co-own a home near the Reds complex. His family live in Canada, and so did his buddy they co-owned this home with. So you got to think that a lot of these neighborhoods or little areas that a lot of these complexes are at, a lot of them are like people's winter homes, and it's not quite winter enough in Winnipeg for them to be headed down. I don't know. You know, if they just held out a little bit longer.
That's true. Definitely have a lot of snowbirds down there in Arizona.
Sure. Just wait another month. Yeah, you get a lot more Canadians down there. They love their Arizona Fall Baseball League baseball. all right, Jared, any last thoughts? We are coming up towards the end of our episode. Anything that you want to kind of put a fine point on from top to bottom, Major League University, players, anything at all?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me since I've started writing is that as we start analyzing people, I think it's always important to remember the human behind the numbers. I think that's something that the more I start to write and the more I get into this, there's a lot of times where the analysis, everybody gets kind of lost in the numbers and things like that, but it's hard to sit back and take a step back and remember that there's a human behind there. So anything that you're saying, anything that you're thinking about commenting on a player's performance and stuff like that, just remember, there's a chance they're going to read it, and there's a chance that it could have some kind of impact on them. And so I think that's the biggest thing that I want to, that's the biggest thing I'm trying to have people take away, is when we're scouting players, when we're analyzing players, just remembering there's a whole human side of the game that still exists, even though we've made it through all these advanced metrics, that human side's still there and it's not going to go away. Yeah. It's still always going to be a major part of the game.
Absolutely. Alexander, final thoughts.
And for the better. It's what makes so much of this worth following. Like, it was absolutely a joy this year to be able to follow the Orioles despite a lot of their losing, because there were just so many spectacular stories that were being told this year. Whether that's Trey Mancini, returning from cancer, or Cedric Mullins just appearing out of the scene out of nowhere. Like Ryan Mountcastle, like setting a bunch of Rutgers likely, but he was really, really performing well as a rookie. And there are a lot of people who maybe aren't going to be long-term pieces on that roster. And you can say that for a lot of other teams who, they're not really in a competitive window either by choice or, just because that's kind of the way that the dominoes have fallen. But, it's because this game isn't played on paper that you can watch people, make that growth and do spectacular things. And if it weren't for that, we wouldn't want to watch them play 162 games, I imagine, every year. But
yeah, you hear a lot of people talking about robo umps. Nobody's talking about robo players, right? It wouldn't be any fun. I mean, it might be fun in a video game, but it wouldn't be fun. You take the human element out of the game and it really would take the soul of it. And I think that's the flip side of that, is remembering exactly what you've said, is that these are players. I mean, at 21-year-old, 22, 23-year-old humans, I don't know. There's a lot of people out there in this world who wouldn't want their life on display as they were making decisions as 21, 22, and 23 year olds. So
I know.
Most definitely. All right. Well, that does bring us to the end of our episode, Jared. We'll have to have you and Austin back most certainly. But if you could just remind people everything Austin said about where they can find Major League University and all that stuff, and plug your own thing and all the sites that we can find you. Your Twitter handle is handles. Is there more than one?
Yeah.
I
have one, I think. Well, so for Major League University, as Austin said, majorleagueuniversity.com. On Twitter, it's Major University. Facebook, Instagram, also Major League University. The podcast is Champion School. They have a bunch of interviews with former players, like our former players, current players, like John Duplantier, Ryan Burr, Aaron Bummer, things like that. So they're using those messages from different players and athletes and trying to bring that home and impact some younger generation. So, and then I'm on Twitter at Jared CP1, the number
one. Stop and think about that for a second.
Not as exciting.
You do some writing elsewhere too, right? Let people know where they could find some of the stuff that you write and remind them.
Yeah, all the Royals stuff I do is on Royals Farm Report. So, and then a lot of the prospect writing related to fantasy baseball is on the Dynasty Guru.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very, very much for joining us. Please pass that back on to Austin. It was good times. Long conversation that didn't feel like it was long at all.
This is welcome. Thank you, guys.
Alexander, everybody knows where they can find Jared and Austin. Could you remind people where they can find us?
Well, they can find you on Twitter at TheCorkedMatt. I'm on Twitter at Chase_Rate. And most importantly, you can find our podcast on Twitter at Dugout Study Hall, where you can send us some questions. Please be sure to subscribe to the Pitcher List podcast feed if you haven't done that already. Leave us a good review if you can be so kind. And if you're not already, please consider becoming a PL Plus member so that you can harass us on the PL Discord. And that's it for me.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you next time.
That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like.
X-Go, give it to you.
How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience.
Acura wins Daytona.
And that, that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it?
X-Go, give it to you.
Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S.
Give up.
Order now at Acura.com.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet. Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.